Step into Mind Matters, where we reveal the high-stakes world of CEOs, from their first-day jitters to game-changing strategies, and equip you with invaluable insights and practical advice essential for your personal growth and leadership journey. And now, Mind Matters.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Kendall Raisler, and today's episode, we have a remarkable guest with us. He brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise as the president and CEO of Nikisco. We can't wait to delve into an insightful conversation. Get ready for an engaging and informative episode, and welcome Ronaldo Hardy to our show. Welcome, Ronaldo.
Thank you. I am so glad to be here today.
We're very happy to have you here with us. You know, we have a number of listeners, brand new CEOs, midterm CEOs, and CEOs that have been doing this for a number of years. And to share your insights and your experiences is very important to every one of us. We can help collectively learn and get insights and save a lot of challenges that they've had. But before I ask you a bunch of questions, for our listeners, if you wouldn't mind giving a brief bio of yourself, how you got started, how you worked your way up into it, where you were, where you're at now, and anything that's an exciting milestone that you feel inside there would be great for the listeners to hear.
Absolutely. So as you said, my name is Ronaldo Hardy, President and CEO of NACUSO, which is the National Association of Credit Union Service Organizations here in the United States. And we have a lot of great work that we do. I've been in financial services now for 22 years, which is crazy to me to say. You know, I feel too young to be saying I've been doing anything for 22 years. And then specifically in credit unions for 20 of those 22 years. I actually had no desire or idea of building a career in financial services when I was in high school. Of course, it's not necessarily one of those career paths that are talked about. So I had no idea that this was a route that I could take. I was actually working at McDonald's. I had been working there for about a year, my senior year in high school. And I have this commitment to excellence wherever I am. It's something that my parents really drilled into me. And so one day, the area head teller of the local bank that was in our area came into McDonald's. And she said, every time I come here, you're always so friendly, always so polite. You get my order right. You do it so well. She said, you would actually do really well on our teller line. I have a part-time position open. Would you consider coming to work for me? And I made the decision to take that journey. So my final 6 weeks of being in high school, I actually became a part-time teller at the local community bank. And that began a journey in financial services for me that was very unintentional, but also purposeful. I spent about a year and 8 months at that bank before going to join a larger bank, which ultimately became the genesis of what is now Capital One Bank. They were a credit card company that purchased a bank in Louisiana, Hibernia, and that's how they expanded their footprint into banking. I worked for them for 4 months. It's the only job I got fired from. I learned some lessons, right? I learned some lessons because I had this big heart. I was doing well serving the customer when they were coming in, but I was struggling because my volume was so high. I was struggling on the fulfillment, and I was too young at the time to really speak up and do what was necessary to say, hey, I'm having this challenge. I'm good in this area. What can we do? I ultimately lost that job, and the leader there, she did not handle it the best, but some of the words that she said to me regarding what my potential was for the future certainly fueled the work that I went on to do. All that fast forward, I went to go work in call centers for a year before I got a call from a credit union that had a position in their call center. So they were marrying my experience in the financial services with what I had in my background in call centers, called to interview me. I had not applied there, so I did not put an application in. Someone else had sent my resume in. So I was completely lost when I got this call that actually did transform my life and my career trajectory. I would go on to work for that credit union for 7.5 years, holding 7 positions while there. I also participated in a competition in our industry when I was 26, called Next Top Credit Union Exec. I actually won my region, went to go compete at the national level. Six of us in Dallas, Texas competed. I became the runner up on nationally in that competition in its inaugural year. However, the winner decided to share her prize since we are a collaborative industry, which was the only reason that they announced the runner up. That was me. It turned into a powerful story in our industry, and I became a part of this ongoing dialogue in every trade press. So again, all of these accidental steps that were very purposeful to my journey, right? This personal brand begins to build. I know nothing of building a personal brand. I'm following my passion. After doing this competition, there's this program called Crash the GAC, the GAC being the biggest conference in our industry. It's in its second year. I became one of 16 crashers. And as a part of that process, we had to do a project when we went home, which led me to start the Young Professionals Network in the state of Louisiana for credit unions. It became the fastest growing. We then began to help other states start theirs, even came up to the national level with CUNA. I chaired their inaugural committee for the establishment of their young professionals initiatives. And it led to so much. You know, I compete in this competition, Next Top Credit Union Exec at 26, November 2010, complete that. By November of 2011, I was CEO of a credit union at the age of 27. It's the cool story, you know, if you pack later, I can, but I become CEO of this credit union at 27, lead that credit union for nearly 5 years before becoming CEO of a credit union three times that size. Keynote here, that credit union that I became a CEO of next was 2.5 hours away from my home. So for 3 years, I led an organization 2.5 hours away from my home that I got on the road and did 5 hours of a round trip daily because I was passionate about the work that we were doing. That then elevated me to an opportunity to become one of 6 owners of a consulting firm, consulting credit unions around the nation. I did that for 4 years before getting this opportunity to become the president and CEO of NCUSO. And our association really stewards the entrepreneurial ecosystem of the credit union industry, having membership for credit unions, CUSOs, fintechs, and credit union service partners to drive collaboration, innovation, and sustainability in the credit union industry. So I'm in my third role as CEO, fourth time at the top of an organization in a career that I have a lot of passion about, purpose invested in, that was very much so unintentionally pursued.
Ronaldo, your passion and happiness comes through so wonderful. And you know, you're the first CEO that I've had that's actually started out of high school in the credit union system. So that's a task well done to begin with already.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, thank you so much for that bio because it was very in-depth. And I'd like to ask you, when you first got promoted to CEO the first time, okay? Mm-hmm. What was your emotions and feelings that day? What was running through Ronaldo's head?
Oh, so many different things. It was the most exciting, overwhelming moment. Giving you a bit of background, I inserted myself in that search because of how my journey had gone. I come from a background of not having access to a lot of financial resources growing up. So as soon as I had access, I wanted access to the things that I could not get. I made some bad decisions that a lot of young adults do in what I accumulated, and then had to make the decision to work full time in order to manage that, which caused me to forfeit a scholarship that I had. And I had dropped out of school initially. I now have a master's degree. But at the time that I applied for my first role as CEO, I did not have my bachelor's degree completed. I had just gone back to school. So I was in my first semester back in school to complete my bachelor's. And that job called for a bachelor's degree. So I inserted myself in that search, knowing that on paper, I was missing what they considered a key qualification, but I still went for it. I told that part of the story because mm-hmm. this contributed to how I felt when I got the opportunity. I was overwhelmed in the greatest way that you know, they saw value in what I brought to the table for Vision Forward and gave me that opportunity without this very key qualification. At times, I, you know, at the same time that I was excited that that happened, I also was like slightly overwhelmed. Like, did you do the wrong thing? Like, you don't have this educational background, even though you have all of these experiences. So there was a bit of like joy and fear, you know, excitement and apprehension, this hope for the future and this, what in the world are you thinking? I believe that I sat in that dichotomy for a while. And I think if most CEOs are honest, many of us go through that, because even if I had all of those qualifications when I sat in that seat, by nature of what the role actually entails, there's a view of the CEO seat that you will never see. I don't care how much education you have. I don't care how close you are to that seat. Until you sit in it, there are some aspects that you have no knowledge of. Mm-hmm. And I think most new leaders sit in that dichotomy of joy and fear when they get the opportunity to step into this new role. And I certainly did.
I totally believe that and know that to be very true as well. You know, Ronaldo, I look at the amount of pressure you would have had to get through BSc and to be jumping into a new role. And when you jump into that role, you've learned, you were fortunate enough that you had some learnings as you were growing up in the credit union and working that. When you move to the association now and become the CEO, you've got lots of experience on your back.
Yes.
But it's still different. Because now you've walked into a CEO position where, is the culture the same? Are the people the same? How did you handle the culture to get them to line into your values of where you wanted to go and take the company versus maybe what some of the newer, older number of years of employees there had felt? How did you handle that?
So it's very interesting. So now if you would talk to me or anybody who's worked with me, they will tell you culture is the number one area of focus for me. And it's one of the greatest strengths that I bring to the table. So in my personhood, two things. My emotional IQ is naturally high. So I'm a highly empathetic person and understanding of people. And then my ability to galvanize is high. So I don't know if you've read the 6 working types of genius. I recently read it and completed the assessment that says my two greatest areas of strength happen to be invention and also galvanizing. So I'm a good person in ideation and bringing people to the table. Because I didn't have the educational background, when I took on my first role as CEO, I didn't necessarily know that culture was where I needed to focus, right? I worked off a natural skill set. My master's now is in human resource education, concentrating in HR and leadership development. So I did a lot of study in culture. But back then, what I knew was that it would be important to create an environment where people could be their greatest selves to accomplish the most for the organization. So what I did not have in education or formal training, I feel like I had in experience. I started to think through what created the greatest opportunity for me to be successful in the roles that I had in the past. And I would consider those things around the vision that I saw for the future. So I feel like I stumbled up on that in my first role as CEO. And I feel like a lot of people do. Like, your first role is like, even if you do the greatest work, which I did a lot of great work there, a lot of it was trial and error and really like really finding and fine tuning. And by the time I got to my second seat, I already knew. I started saying, like, you know, that organization at the time, a lot of the financial performance indicators were in recession. So we were receding in ways that we didn't need to. There were some specific areas of growth that we needed and lending and all of this. And so you have all of these quantifiable goals that we know that we need to move the goalposts or like drive some impact on. Right. And I'm coming in as the new CEO and I say, I appreciate all that. Yeah, that's good. And the first thing that we're going to do is work on the culture. And I know I'm looking at a board like, I hear you, but like, we really need like loans to grow and we need this. And my pushback there was, when we want a plant to grow properly, the first thing that we do is we check what it's cultured in. right? And when we culture that plant properly, even though the speed may not go in the way in which we desired initially, because we can all have that microwave mentality, fix it now, let it change tomorrow. What I know about it, we culture a plant right, it will grow the way it's supposed to grow, and it will grow in a sustainable way. And I got the board on board with this idea that culture will be the leading force for us. And it informed how we took every step. So when we went into our strategic planning session, as you can tell, I get excited about this.
Yeah.
When we went into our strategic planning session, I remember saying to our team, hey, you know, day one of our session, we will not talk about any quantifiable goal, which is weird for a financial institution that pretty much runs off these quantifiable goals. I said, and we're going to talk today for an entire day on if we were no longer here in this community, why would it miss us? And when we started that conversation, we really could not define why we would be missed, which led us to the next step. I'm walking us through a cultural journey, which led us to the next step of, well, why would we want it to miss us? Which then helped us to change our vision. We became a financial institution that really reinvented itself as a social enterprise, delivering via financial products and services. So we decided that our vision was to eliminate poverty in our community with a mission of financial empowerment for all. And to build a culture that would support that, we had to adjust our strategy and then make sure that we brought our staff along the journey. So we designed an all-staff training day where we did a poverty simulation for them to get their opportunity to sit in the seat of the types of consumers that we wanted to reach. And then we said to them by the end of that, and now shut up, you can tell I love talking. We said at the end of that, you know, what we do is a calling, it's a purpose. And if you don't feel called to this, we totally understand, because we didn't want anybody to feel like there's a mandate on everyone to feel this calling, but our organization is called or purposed in this way. And if you don't feel called to this or purpose to this, we invite you to discover the purpose that is for you, and we will help you. That was a kind way of saying the culture is changing here. We realize everybody may not fit. We want you to be in the right place. We'll help you get to another place. It may not be here, but this is how we are making sure that we've cultivated the ground for the right growth here. And when I tell you that accelerated everything, the credit union is still operating on that strategic plan in that culture that was strategically and very craftily designed. It's caused the credit union to almost double in asset size over the last 4 years since I have been gone, following that same roadmap.
Kudos to you. You know, to put a culture, to bring a culture together, I loved hearing your story about how you pulled the plan together, how you listened.
Yes.
Learned and then implemented it. And I have to ask, is there any mentors that you had around you to help you? Did you have mentors that helped you? And if they did, what type of support did they give? Because a bunch of our CEOs maybe have very few mentors or have lots of mentors. How do we share your experience? Tell me a little more about that.
Absolutely. So before I became CEO, when I was at the credit union, first credit union I worked for, the CEO who was CEO when I got there, so she retired along the way, and her successor was promoted. And he also worked with me, but she really did. Like, she saw something in me, and she was really making sure opportunities kept coming, and she got creative. One of the best ways she prepared me, two things I'll say. One of the best ways she prepared CEO, she sent me to a branch manager of a branch that was 15 minutes away from the main office. Right. Or from my house, about 45 minutes away from the main office. So I drove an hour and 15 minutes there on a temporary assignment, which typically would mean 6 months in our credit union. It ended up going 3 years. But I'm going to tell you how she got creative. She said, OK, and I was 24. She said, go manage this branch. She pulled it out of the region. So that role would typically report to a regional manager that reported up to her as a CEO. She pulled it out of the region. It was only standalone branch in the credit union, and said, do whatever you want to do. It had performed in the red for four years before I got there. And I didn't ask them when they first offered the role, like they were like, we offer you this role. It was more money. I'm like, yeah, I'll go do it. And then my mind said, wait, every other place that you've held in this organization, has always had a problem. Like, I had developed a reputation in the industry, I mean, not the industry, in our credit union, that I could solve issues, which helped me, which is one of the reasons I now say he who solves problems will always have a job. He or she, right, who solves problems will always have a job. But so this in the red, she said, we'll pull it out of the region, do what you want with it, and you'll report to me. She gave me that creativity or that creative outlet to figure out what would work for me and to give me my own wins so I would start being confident about what I was accomplishing. Before doing that, she decided, I'm meeting with you once a month for a mentoring session. I was the only non-executive manager that she was doing that with. So that piece. And then not only did she do that, the VP of marketing took an interest in me and did the same. When I became a CEO, I ended up finding a CEO in the industry. It was the first time that I had seen an African-American man leading a larger entity in our space. His name was Hubert Huseman. He's now deceased. And when I did the Next Top Credit Union Exec competition, one of the things that I could get with my Next Gen membership was a mentor. So I found my own mentor and I said, link me with him. And so he was available to answer questions for me along the way. And I will tell you, I'm just reaching a new spot where I'm starting to get those mentors again. That, you know, I am, many would argue, and it is so for me humbling to be in this kind of, this pace that feels ahead of schedule. It causes me to go into rooms, and I've become accustomed to going into rooms and being the youngest person. It's weird to like be 40 and be like, okay, well, I'm a different kind of young. I'm not a young adult, a young professional anymore, but still walking in rooms where I'm the youngest guy. Yeah. And when I'm in there, I'm like, hey, in what ways can I be a sponge so I can learn? So I'm now identifying new people who can mentor me into this next, because I feel this greater responsibility in how I'm helping to steward this facet of our industry.
That is fantastic. Being able to replace yourself, rejuvenate so people have what you have and pass that down is the greatest gift you can give in any leadership.
Yes.
And when we're talking about leadership, we're talking about the driving, the 5 hours you did in the past and your round trips and all the work that you're doing, the plates you're spinning between the boards, between your employees, between your customers, yes, your marketing. There's so many plates that you're spinning. How do you handle your work-life balance?
This episode is powered by Onist AI. Onist's optimized onboarding process and minimized documentation result in an expedited and seamless financing journey for clients, enhancing their contentment and commitment. Through identity verification, financial data validation, and creditworthiness assessment, our software empowers companies to make well-informed financing choices, bolster application speed and customer uptake by 30%, and cut operational costs by a significant 70% with Onist AI. For more information, visit onist.ai.
It's very interesting. So I kind of, some years ago, began to embrace this whole concept of a work-life blend. And that might be, that may be telling about me being a millennial. I think we kind of started finding ways to cause life to be kind of one big thing that doesn't necessarily divide itself, but it continues. So I look at a work-life blend. One of the things that helped me, I'm going to tell you a few things. One of the things that helped me was clearly defining my personal mission statement. So I have a personal mission statement, change the world by building the people who will change the world. And when I simplify that, I say that I build people. One of the things to know about me is I also pastor church. So in the middle of all of that is that piece. Ooh. And I know.
So you're a busy man.
It helped me to take a different look at what I was doing. So now I say, well, I get up every day to build people, and I accomplish that many different ways rather than saying I do many different things. The second thing that because I build people, I'm heavily invested in leadership. So in every lane that I'm in, my focus is building the greatest leadership infrastructure, giving those individuals the tools they need to work at their best right? And trusting them. I'll give them the end. I'm not a leader that has to manage the means. I was in this class, an ethics class, when I was going through QCEO Institute, and we had this debate on what's more important, the means or the end. I argued the end is more important as long as the means are ethical. Like, I was like, we can't cross. I don't want unethical means. So they're both important. But for me as a leader, it's learning that the end matters more. And then making sure my people know you have some freedom to run towards that end as long as you stay within ethical boundaries. So by doing that, and I was just having this conversation this morning with one of my employees, by doing that, what it builds in them is the same confidence that was built in me by giving me the opportunity to have some liberty to create and develop. What that also does is that takes some of the burden off of me to have to be the answer and the solution to every problem that emerges. By trusting others, by developing others, by building capacity, going very deep in leadership at all every level to develop even in the culture, to your point earlier, this mindset that we all lead in some way, that allows for more bandwidth to be present for me to do the things that I am doing. And that thing that I do, although it manifests many different ways, it's simply to wake up every day to build people.
You know, the it is amazing how when we listen, we learn, mm-hmm. we express back and help people. It's all anybody wants is help. We all have the same fears. We all have the same challenges. And for a leader to expose himself in that way, to show it to them and give them the proper lines, kudos to you. Thank you. Makes an awful lot of sense. You know, I'd like to jump forward and to today right mm-hmm. now. And I'd like to talk about scaling your business. Okay? Hey, you're 7 months in your role. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What strategy have you employed to scale your organization, whether it's expanding, you know, geographically or in terms of services and products?
Yes. So where we are right now in our growth stage is we started with an evaluation of the value proposition. So stepping into the organization from the outside, looking in, understanding this key segment of the market that Nikuso really wanted to reach in credit unions. The first thing I did was really evaluate what is the value proposition. You know, externally, I really had a hard time understanding it. And I conveyed that to the board when I was in my interview process. And so I did a number of things coming in. One, I went on a listening tour at every level. And let me listen to board members. Let me listen to staff. Let me listen to our membership partners. Let me listen and figure out where everyone is in the discussion. What kind of apathy? I walk into an organization that was experiencing a certain amount of apathy because of this desire to see some more progress being made. And so went through this listening process that then informed our ideation around what the organization could be. And when we went through the ideation process, it was so effective because there was this scan of the industry. Where does it sit? And, you know, where are gaps in the market? There was this understanding of what the board felt, what the staff felt, what the membership feels, what the greater credit union industry is feeling. And that helped us to develop a design that made sense both for who we are and who we desire to be. And we developed this 3-year roadmap that we just started implementing in January. It's very aggressive and progressive. So it's a lot of work. But our steps are very refined. And, you know, we define 3 areas of strategic priority for us: cultivate collaboration, inspire innovation, strengthen sustainability. And then that helped us to build out what's the right product and service mix. What are the right educational tools? What are the right communities to build in order to deliver on this vision overall? And we've been able to develop that in a way that we're going to really be able to scale, grow, and increase what we're doing. And also, we start looking at what's really the appropriate journey map. If we really got an organization from its infancy that maybe has this great idea that we want to grow them up from that place all the way up to a scale solution in the market, how do we do that? Very similar to what I did when I was at Southwest Louisiana Credit Union, and we're trying to solve for how do we get someone out of the poverty cycle? It just so happens to be a different side of the discussion on how do we get organizations where credit unions have been entrepreneurial, how do we get them to scale? And that has informed how we designed our roadmap there. So I hope that helps to answer your question, but that's, you know, what we're doing right now to scale. It all started for us with the value proposition, because if that's not well developed and well understood, it's hard to move anything.
How do you convey your message if you don't have it internally to yourself?
There you
go. Absolutely right. So, you know, you talked about technology, and of course you have lots of technologies in your roles, in your role in that. How is technology playing a scale, playing a part of the process of scale? How are you leveraging it to enhance the efficiencies for your customers and members?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. So, of course, like I was saying, we help to steward the entrepreneurial ecosystem of our industry. And part of that happens to be both QSOs and fintechs. What we've seen over time is even QSOs, which are credit union service organizations, they are now QSOs are forming as fintechs. Fintechs are becoming QSOs as well. So technology is really at the center of what we do. And we try to be the right solution for those organizations to get the education they need, the tools and resources they need to thrive. So ultimately, they can do their work in helping to advance credit unions, which happens to be an end goal for us. Simultaneously, we're looking inward and saying, what's going on with our own tech stack? You know, what do we have happening right now? How well are we living out what we're seeking to steward? So we're stewarding this piece of the industry. How well are we giving that out? You know, and we started that process internally of our own digital transformation, utilizing, you know, and also getting ready to lean into more of an agility-based model. So a lot of people have leaned into agility as how they're working through their processes as an organization. We are doing the same so that we can really practice what we preach. So that is the journey that we are on right now. We're undergoing our own transformation while we're helping the industry to transform too.
It's wonderful when you actually walk the line.
Yes.
Then you can tell people how it is to walk it.
Absolutely.
Theory is a wonderful thing. We've read lots of books and it has great information, but let's face it, there's nothing like the actual school of hard knocks, and you go through it and learn it and to be able to give that on to everybody else. Ronaldo, unfortunately, we're out of time. I would love to talk with you more, and maybe we'll get another episode in another time. Thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights. I believe our listeners will get a ton of value out of that. I know I've picked up a lot of great information from that. So I'd like to thank you very much for your time and hope to be speaking with you again in the future. Thanks for joining us today on our podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, and I hope to be back.
Bye. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Mind Matters.